Welcome to LOI Central. Just millimeters past the touchline and coming into your living room, it's Dan and Johnny.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of LOI Central. On today's show, we have Dara Doyle. After Longford Town finally broke their famine, beating Dundalk, what a win on Saturday night in the League of Ireland, and Maynooth player manager Kieran Kilduff ahead of the Cup quarterfinals. Great to have him back talking a bit of League of Ireland and talking about the Cup quarterfinals that are coming up this weekend. So it's quite an up weekend for a lot of clubs, but not for the eight remaining in the Cup. And we had some very interesting things to talk about in the League of Ireland this weekend. Some of them refereeing related yet again. It is in association with futureticketing.ie. We're on SoundCloud, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts. And thanks to Oliver Marketing, we're out here in Glasnevin enjoying being back in a little studio again with beautiful sounds. The clarity of me and Dan's voice in Oliver Marketing.
Clarity, yeah.
Beautiful clarity. And
a bit of tension in the ranks because I was just slating your tardiness there. You're rocked in a bit late. You'd lost your keys. We've had a tense morning here, to be honest.
The two lads are outside having a coffee, delayed by my tardiness, and hopefully they will be happy enough to join us shortly. And we'll be giving away a 4-star pizza later on, Dan. Have you come up with a question?
I do, of course. It's Kieran Kilduff related.
Is it?
Yeah.
Great to have the big man back.
It is, yeah. Well, just do it now. Let's just mix it up and do the question now.
Why not?
We'll just do it early in the show. So the question is, Kieran Kilduff was a member of the Shamrock Rovers Europa League squad in 2011 and the Dundalk Europa League squad of 2016. Probably better known for 2016, but he did win the penalty in 2011 that got Shamrock Rovers through. Name the two other players who played in both of those campaigns. I mean, it should be a straightforward question. The answer isn't Sean Gannon, by the way, because he didn't play in 2011. He was at Shamrock Rovers, but the other two players who played in both of those two Europa League campaigns. So
what's,
there we go.
What's going on with you?
What's going on with me? I don't know. I mean,
What is going on?
Where was I on Friday? I was at Shamrock Rovers in Waterford on Friday. You mentioned it's a quiet weekend, but Shamrock Rovers did play Sligo Rovers Saturday as well. So there is one league fixture.
Recording this Monday as well. We have a couple of early
Recording it early for a couple of reasons, but yeah. Like I was at Shamrock Rovers Waterford on Friday. Mark Bertram, not too happy with the refereeing situation. I came home and I saw that Drogheda and Bowes had been involved in a game where people weren't too happy about the refereeing situation. Derry Finn Harps, maybe not as much, but there was a couple of red cards, but there was a bit of a scrap. It doesn't seem like maybe as contested as maybe some of the other ones. And what was the other game on Friday?
Longford and
Saturday. No. The other game on Friday. Come on, we're forgetting another game on
Pats
Friday.
Sligo
and Pats, where I went home and watched a bit of that, and the penalty to put Sligo Rovers ahead wasn't a penalty. And there was a foul before their second goal. Now, they should have got a penalty, I think, at another stage in the first half.
And an offside was given.
But it was, you know, again, not great. And then on Saturday, you have Longford. We'll talk to Dara Doyle.
Are we just going to talk about referees Longford today,
Dundalk. I know, it just feels like we're going that way. I mean, Derek Tomley, I'm assuming you've seen the footage of him sort of ushering Han away.
What do you make of that?
Not great, really, is it? I mean, it's sort of... Sort of like...
Would he do that to a big, burly Irish defender, would he?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't want to speculate on that. Maybe he would. Like, maybe he would.
Shouldn't be doing to anyone.
But it was the case of it was just like a sort of an overzealous bouncer, you know, policing a teenage disco.
Had some of them in our times.
you've been ushered out a few places. ushered back in a couple of minutes later, to be fair. But when they realised who they kicked out. But unbelievable. So, I mean, the fact that Dundalk lost on Saturday as well, I mean, it's sort of like, how bad can things go? It turns out they can go really bad. And they are in a bizarre situation. We'll obviously speak to Dara probably with the bright side of that equation. With Longford Town winning.
How much do you blame the players there, though? Because you can't just turn it on in Europe, be way above, punching above your weight, and then be rubbish in the league. It doesn't add up.
No, and listen, they've had really bad luck with injuries, but I think there's obviously a lot of concerns he would have. Like, you know, the players don't seem to be responding to management either. And that was the concern when the decision was made to bring the manager back in. And the question is, was it just in Europe they were performing for themselves? There was a few issues with bonuses during Europe. I think that's going around the place, a few tensions there, I think related to bonus amounts and do you get bonus amounts before or after expenses are taken out? I think that was a source of contention, which isn't great, but then there's a lot going on behind the scenes at the club. Players don't know where they're going with their contracts, but that doesn't give them a pass for like really, really bad performances. But like, you know, it just seems to be a weird culture. I see people commenting, you know, I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, I saw Vinnie Perth was on off the ball yesterday.
I thought that was a bit strange.
Talking about Liverpool and Leeds. Now, I would say in his defence on that one, it's probably a booking that was done in advance. And by all accounts, I think his situation at the dock is like not a, you know, very secure one. So, I mean, someone has to, you have to sort of work on this. And we both appear on off the ball regularly.
After a bad Saturday night.
but like, yeah, well, they tend to be the forerunner to them. But yeah, I suppose it is one of those things, if you talk about optics and you know what Dundalk again are supposed to represent in the country and being this team that sort of sets the standard, and then you know the day after they've had their worst loss in years, the manager's out there doing something. It doesn't look great, but I guess there was probably a commitment there. But it's the type of thing that it just, the whole thing is not good. The dynamic doesn't look great. It doesn't look a particularly happy camp, and I think there's a lot more of a unified look around some of the other teams that are down there. And it may well be that a lot of fears people would have had are coming to fruition now. But I mean, it just doesn't, like, you still, like, you can be harsh about that and try and find excuses for people. And there's no doubt if players don't really know where their future stands, like, they're going to be distracted. But also you can flip it and go, they want to get contracts somewhere next year. And the European performances alone, listen, to be honest, I don't know, actually, I'm talking rubbish there. I think all those players would probably get sorted because of their pedigree and their track record, and they'd probably go, listen, that place was mad for the year. It might affect them to some degree.
But I think if a dressing room isn't right, though, you will get found out even at this level. Like,
but they're not finishing games well. I think the thing with me is that they're not finishing games well. They're losing direction as the game goes on. They started actually very well for 10 minutes in Longford. They started well in Waterford and scored early. But actually, by the end of the games, they're not looking anywhere near as assured. Now, their injury record is off the charts. But again, I mean, their whole medical department has been revamped during the year. That's no reflection on anyone that's there at the moment, and it's not the case, and you have to be very careful, like, in terms of how you speak about that. But they did have a really good setup there, and you know, for other reasons, it seems like people left, personality clashes, and I'm not talking about America either here. You're talking about more stuff on the ground, which just isn't great. And I think, to be fair to Vinny, I think a lot of that stuff had happened before he'd come into the club. And obviously since then, yeah, like, just one or two appointments you're looking at going, right, so what's going on here, you know?
7 wins from 25 games.
Yeah, and how many points since Chris Shields left, I wonder, as well, which was the decision they allowed. So this week they play
Sligo tomorrow, isn't
Sligo
it?
Sligo tomorrow, yeah, on Tuesday. This is the crucial thing. We are recording early this week, and there are midweek fixtures, so that's something we have to bear in mind. For some people, like Finn Harps and Bowes is tonight. So,
speaking of Bowes, like, 9th defeat of the season in 23 league games.
Yeah, so
3-0 down at Drogheda.
Yeah, yeah.
What a bonkers round of games. Like.
No, it was, and very erratic stuff from them. And listen, who knows, by the time that we're out, you know, they might have won up in Donegal or whatever. So that's the one thing we have to bear in mind. But yeah, it's been a sort of, it's been, the table is sort of a bit crazy. You know, Rovers winning just steadies things for them a small bit. And, you know, with Pats losing, as you suggested, might happen last week, it does look like the title is probably the one that will be wrapped up reasonably early, I still believe.
Pats and Rovers is next weekend.
Yeah, so I mean there's still a level of doubt there, but you just think Rovers, to get their show back, and they'll pick up enough points. But everything else, you know, besides the Longford situation, everything else.
Dara, we'll be telling Dara they're back in the race.
We'll tell Dara back in the race, but we shall see. Where were you on Friday? Were you at a game?
No, I was on the way to Cork.
Oh, yeah.
So I watched the game on the box, basically. As best
you're off cycling in Cork.
Berra Peninsula cycle.
You have a tremendous life.
Well, I mean, cycling 160K uphill is a tremendous life.
Well, you mean you chose to do it? Was it a job? It was clearly enjoyable. Recreation. Who did you go down with?
Met Brian Murphy, actually, Cork City fan down there, and he couldn't go. on the cycle, and that was the whole plan. So his mate and me went along, even though we'd never met before. And then I met my club mates from Clane there. So we finished off just in time for the All-Ireland, actually.
It's a great life you have.
Good life. Back yesterday for Off the Ball. Reviewed the papers, and there was hardly anything about Stephen Kenny, which was interesting.
Yeah.
There was literally very little about Ireland in the paper at all.
I think everyone's just...
fatigued.
Everyone's had their say, I think. And
well, they haven't, because here's Kieran Kilduff and Darragh Doyle. But we'll get to the lads.
We will.
Gentlemen, sorry for keeping you waiting.
It's no problem.
Yeah. Don't sound like you're that unhappy about it or happy about it. Congratulations to both of you. First of all, I think you, Dara, it must have been unbelievable to get a win at the weekend. I know it's been so many draws for Longford, so many competitive defeats, but beat Dundalk. I mean, I'd love to know what the budget difference was there between Longford and Dundalk.
Yeah, obviously, it's massive. You can only imagine. And listen, budgets are budgets. They are what they are. We knew what we had at the start of the season, and we had to work with what we had, and we brought in as competitive a group as we felt we could. We probably weren't in a position where we could go after a lot of experienced players with what we had, so we had to sort of go a different route in bringing young, hungry players, a couple of players that have been let go from Premier sides, or, you know, we had to take a like of an Aaron Robinson from Leinster Senior League at Bluebell to bring into the group. One important thing with all the players we signed was the characteristics of the actual person and what they would bring to our group as well, as obviously from the football side, and we've brought some really great characters into our group. It has been a testing season, there's no doubt about that. You know, we obviously had that win at the start of the season, and it's been a long time coming. We've played 30 games now in total, and I can count on one hand how many games we probably didn't deserve to get out from that game. But there's 25 games that we genuinely could have got a win or a draw from that game. We've got a lot of draws. That was our second win against Dundalk at the weekend, and listen, I'm really happy with that. I'm not just in here today, obviously, because we got the win at the weekend. Because
yeah, it looks a bit dubious.
He was nearly going to be on last week, so it's not like...
Yeah, I've asked Aaron a few times, in fairness. There's always been a legitimate excuse. Why didn't you sign Kieran Kilduff, though? You would have been sorted this season.
Well, like I say, we had a chat before we came in here today. And
it's
actually,
too late now.
No, but there was a conversation back
then. That's mad. I did not know that.
Yeah, no, there was, because we were looking at the types of... You know, again,
personalities.
Yeah, and people to bring in that could help us. And listen, it's well known that the couple of injuries he's had at the latter end of his career there, and we still felt maybe there was a possibility of bringing someone of his caliber into the group for how helpful they would be. But it was something that we weren't able to get done. And we left with the group obviously that we had, which, you know, we're happy with all the players that we have, and they've given our club everything this year. They really have. There's not been a game that they haven't turned up and given everything they have. And you can't really ask for more than that.
What was your take on the game on Saturday, January? I was reading Vinny's comments after. He said Longford had 1.5 shots in the game, in 90 minutes. A few issues around the pitch or whatever. What was your take on it?
We had a lot more shots than 1.5. You know what I mean? We had a number of chances. We could have scored again. Callum Warfield could have scored on the break late in the game. Obviously, it's a game that we'll probably talk about things other than players that happened on the night, which left us with two players short on the night, which made it more difficult for the last 35 minutes of the game. In the first half, I think Dundalk had two pretty good chances in the first 10 minutes. I heard something that they may have been four up, which, you know, it's miles off the mark. They had a chance with Stanton at the back post where he should have probably hit the target with a volley. And then they had another cross come into the box that Hoban got on the end of, but it's probably a little high for him in the air, and he heads it over the bar. He's probably talking about another chance that from across from their left side that Hoban heads just wide of the post, but it's actually offside. So they were the only real chances they had early on in the game. After that, you could probably see Dundalk, they were very nervy, struggled to play out from the back, put themselves under pressure an awful lot, and that was because of how we set up on the night and the problems that we caused them with our setup, and we really did cause them problems. We made it really difficult for them. We won the ball back high up the pitch on a number of occasions, and you know, we score a goal. It's probably going down as a goalkeeping mistake for in the 45th minute, but I don't care. We've had enough little things and bits of luck, and decisions go against us a lot this year, and delighted to go in at 1-0 up. The second half, we thought that again, that we'd definitely be able to catch them on the break, that they'd be coming after us, obviously feeling they'd have to get a result, and that they'd leave themselves open. But the way the game went in, 10 to 15 minutes into the second half, we're a player down through a poor decision, in my opinion.
Who was your first red?
First red was Aaron Robinson. Mm. It was a two yellow card. So the first yellow, 100% yellow card, takes a player down in the middle of the park, it's a yellow card. The second one was a throw-in from probably their right back in the middle of the pitch, and it's thrown in to, I think it was Patching, and Robinson comes in, gets a touch on the ball, and this is 5 yards from us, hits his foot first, then hits Patching's foot, and then goes out for a throw. But as they're both competing, and obviously we win the ball first, Patching then kicks the bottom of Robinson's boot after Robinson kicks it onto his foot and goes out for a throw. And if you look at the video, you'll see me going, air throw. And I'm pointing that way for that way. And the ref has blown his whistle because obviously Patching screamed when it happened. He's gone down and the ref's just blown his whistle for a free kick. And the fourth official who's right beside us and can see what we can see is screaming, yep, not a yellow, not a yellow. And he gives him the yellow and he's sent off. And it wasn't
Were
even
you incredulous?
It wasn't even a free kick. It should have been actually air throw. It leaves us in that position where we're down to 10 men and it does make things more difficult. And, you know, you have to alter your shape and get more bodies behind the ball and make it difficult for them to play through you. And we did that. And, you know, they didn't really have many chances at all till the end of the game. They had, I think, a header from one of the lads. They had a chance from Boyle from that free kick when the player got sent off that went into the box that landed with Boyle and hit the post and just landed back in Lee's arms. And again, another bit of luck that went our way.
The break you needed. Yeah, and then like you had the Rob Mandy sending off as well, which was a controversial one, shall we say. And in fairness, the hand sending off was
there's
a controversial one as well, too.
There should be 22 players finishing on that pitch. And, you know, we should be talking about the players on the pitch because they're what's important. The players on the pitch and the supporters that are in the ground, you know, everything else, we shouldn't be talking about that. And unfortunately, we're talking about it far, far too much. And I mean, we can't all be mad. We can't all be wrong. All of us managers coming out with stuff like this. And, you know, it doesn't help. You know, we go into a game now in a couple of weeks against Derry now where we're going to be two players down and two very big players down. And it's really a disappointment because the Lamb lads don't deserve that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the position that we're in.
I don't want to dwell on this too much because we're having a lot of referees chat around the league. But at the same time, you know, I was at Rovers Waterford on Friday. Mark Bertram was gone off about referees after the Tim Clancy one the week before, because not just one it's not just one manager say on a crusade or something. It's more of a collective thing at the moment. Like what needs to be done from here? What rather than talking about what's gone wrong, like what would you like to see happen? Because it does appear like we've reached a point where this is just becoming a massive talking point far too often.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we'll all get criticized in our jobs, particularly management and players, if we don't perform or if we make mistakes. And I don't know if they're just held to the same levels of criticism in the performance. And that's not criticism. That's criticism of being critical of their game. What's good? What's bad? What can we do better? And there's too many things that, you know, are falling, unfortunately, on that bad side. Now, what can we do? I think the first time that I've ever heard was 2 years ago. We had the launch of the league at Abbottstown. And that was the very first time ever that there was actually dialogue between the officials and the managers in a room for about an hour. And I don't think the refs on that occasion could believe some of the things that we were saying. Back then, obviously reports went in from the referees and officials as to what happened after games or incidents when someone got sent off. And that day was the first day that the actual officials realised that managers and staff had access to the actual reports that were sent into the FAI. They didn't know that. So we were looking at reports. And a couple of years ago, I got sent off at Shelburne when I was the assistant I got sent off for something I didn't say. I know what I did say, and people heard me say that, but the report goes in and it says something completely different. And we've had an incident again this year in Drogheda earlier on in the season where myself and John Martin get sent off for ineptitude on the official side, totally, and incorrect statements that go in. Now, you can call that whatever you want, but incorrect statements went into the wording and actually what was said by both of us. And listen, I'm annoyed that I have to speak about things like these, but it happens, it goes on. I understand the frustration of managers because, listen, we all want to really enjoy our football. And we don't want to be talking about issues like this that, you know, they bring a negative side to our game, and we don't need that. We need positivity around our league, our club. And, you know, it's about, like I said, it's about the players on the pitch and it's about the supporters out there because they're the most important things.
Yeah, and we have to say this, and we don't have a referees representative here, and you know, they don't actually necessarily have a voice that will come out and represent them publicly in the media, which is possibly an issue that exists sometimes as well. And it does appear though a lot comes back to this appeals process and the communication of the report that stands as final. And when you're talking about managers on about GoPros and video recording and stuff, it's not a healthy relationship. There's no trust or understanding there, and that to me seems to be the breakdown.
Yeah, you know? No, I think it is. And, you know, listen, it's a difficult job. There's no doubt about that. And no one goes out there to make mistakes or to make controversial decisions in a match. Well, I'm sure they don't, but it's happened all too frequently. How can it be helped? I do think that fourth officials probably do too much at times, and I think their job is to help the referee with little bits, and you know, but they're getting involved in too much on the sideline. They're having arguments with referees, sorry, not with referees, with managers, with coaches. They're trying to tell them how they should coach and manage. They're trying to stop them from talking.
Has that been a new thing, or like
that's no, that's been there. Listen, I've been involved in on the management side of things as player coach at Capitale in 2017, but played, so I wasn't on the bench. But since 2018, it's been an issue since I've been involved on the management side of the game.
They're trying to tell you how to manage nearly.
Yeah, they're trying to stop you from talking, and then you can obviously, something will happen on the pitch and you may shout for something, and that happens, and you shout for something on the pitch, and they'll tell you to stop shouting. And you're like, well, I'm not shouting, I'm talking to the ref. Well, you're shouting. That's because I'm 50 yards away from him, he's on the pitch. If I talk, he won't hear me. So there's little things, and you know, we're passionate people about football and managers on the sideline, and that's, you know, when you manage there's incidences in the game that you want to go your way. Of course there is. What do they expect us all to be mutes on the sideline?
No.
Did you find this, Kieran, actually? Because since Tim Clancy gave that interview with LMFM, obviously there's, I think a lot of people would respect Aaron now for saying what he said today on the basis that a lot of managers, wisely or otherwise, haven't really said anything publicly to back up Tim Clancy, but there are clearly a lot of personality clashes going on in the league, and a lot of it isn't actually necessarily to do with decision making.
No, like I think Dara said it, they can't all be wrong. Do you know what I mean? That's the underlying thing here. That's probably, it's been getting a bit of a snowball effect now that people are beginning to row in behind people. People are beginning to understand that, okay, there's obviously something going on here that's disgruntling so many people on the sideline, and at the end of the day, we shouldn't be talking about it. I mean, we should be talking about the football on the pitch. That's how the sport will improve here in the country, and that's what we want. But it's obviously an issue, and it's obviously an issue that needs to be fixed sooner rather than later, because it can't drag on. And it is every game you go to, there's usually one. You know, we had it even at Shells, you know, the refs don't want to be criticised. Whether, and then you're saying you can't even talk to them after. Like you're saying, talk to them at halftime, but you're trying to approach them at halftime to tell you to go away. And I'm new to the management role, so I'm probably not experienced enough to even comment on it. I haven't experienced it firsthand, but I know it's been going on, and probably a lot longer than you're even saying. In 2018, as a player, you know, we've often come into dressing rooms disappointed at Shells or even at Dundalk back in the day, and you know, you'd have your personal opinion of what the referee was like on the night, but you couldn't voice it, or you'd be, you know, prosecuted for saying whatever you felt was the truth. And you can't actually, there's no real accountability then for them, because you know, it's just, you get on with it, move on, forget about it. And that seems to just, yeah, that's probably the issue at the minute.
Yeah, well, Graham Cummins, an Arsenal Examiner, in fairness, he defended the referees and said, like, you know, if they do make mistakes, they can get punished. That, you know, they may not do a certain game. But just from my perspective looking in, if you look at Paul McLaughlin, didn't have a good night for Sligo and Pats. But these were decisions that, like, you could see how he got them wrong, because they were, like, the replay showed it a lot more clear, I think, than, like, little kind of touches that were fouls but weren't immediately apparent. I'm not sure referees, like, I'm not sure managers have a massive problem with that. It's more like the way they're treated. I mean, sent to the stands time and time again for really minor infractions. Like, I mean, treated like children in some respects.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And I don't know, I think a lot of the officials in the league are probably teachers and guards. And I don't know whether that's anything that
I'm
not a guard either.
I don't know, but I don't know what there is and what can we do to improve, because it definitely does need to improve. Like you say, if there's less issues there, we can talk about the proper stuff, and that's what we need to talk about, let's be fair. But no, it's something that, you know, definitely needs to improve and get better, because I'm fed up.
Yeah, so much of it just seems to be communication. I think that's the problem. I think you speak to managers and players, and they actually, now you're still going to be annoyed, but if a referee hooks you in the tunnel and says, listen, I got that one wrong, you're not going to go, oh, well, that's, you know, great. But I think you probably appreciate the degree of interaction that you have.
I've had that this year. Like, we played Shamrock Rovers earlier on in the season, and we had a penalty after 10 minutes where Pico Lopez takes down Aaron Dobbs. No attempt to get the ball, and we get a penalty, but he only gets a yellow card. The rules are quite clear. If there's no attempt to win the ball, it's a red card. And the refs apologise to us at halftime. Well, got that wrong.
Sorry. Fair play,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are refs out there that will speak to you, and that has happened. And let's not tire them all with that brush, because, and the same in any, I suppose, line of work. You know, everyone has their people that are at the high level and middles or whatever. It's just, it's the nature of life.
You could do it looking at the Leinster Senior League referees. Now, there's... There's a case study for you as well.
Okay. We won't go down that one yet.
But I suppose a wider point is we have to encourage people to referee, and I'm not sure I'd like to do it. I'm not sure any of us would like to do it.
You see, this is the other thing. Like, you know, in recent times, we've had instances of referees like at lower level, like getting attacked and all. Mm. And you always have to try and sell it to people and go down the road. But there's a balancing act between that and the assessing process seems to be something that's quite contentious as well too, and that they have to sort of like, and they sort of operate as a bit of an island as well. This is the other thing that you might talk to people, like you might even see people from the FAI who could be critical enough for the referees, but they don't necessarily have the authority to sort of necessarily go in and start, sort of, you need to do things better.
Yeah. It probably starts at, you know, everyone starts somewhere, and the majority of them will start at schoolboy level at younger ages when they go into reffing, and the best ones should be identified from schoolboy level. I mean, I coached, when I was finishing my career, the last 10 years, I was coaching a schoolboy team from under 8s to under 17s, and I've seen the difficulties that officials have at that age, and there's a lot of issues. Now, my whole thing, for true, when I did the schoolboy football, it was all about the kids. Everything was about the kids and the enjoyment of them at football. And I was never one in schoolboy foot that would ever have a pop at a referee, ever, regardless of what I make mistakes, because that's the learning board for everybody, for kids, for referees, for parents on the sideline. That's the learning board. Now, I had a team, I pulled the parents in before every season to tell them what they could say and things on the sideline. As regard, don't be giving out. Don't tell kids what to do. Encouragement only. That's it. And then parents can probably watch games now later in life and watch football and enjoy it. On the opposite sidelines, I'd see parents acting like lunatics. Mm-hmm. And they're probably some of the people in League of Ireland grounds acting like lunatics. So it's all about development and doing it from an early age. And it's the exact same with players as it is with referees. And the best referees need to be encouraged from early in their career as a referee that they may be identified as going the right way. I'm not sure if there is now a department where they do that. I know there was a number of years ago. Whether that's still there, I don't know. But you know, they should be looking at getting it, because you mentioned the shortage that's there, and we can't play football without officials. So it's a big issue, and it's something that definitely needs to be looked at from the bottom up and where we all start.
Yeah. So. So
we'll solve that problem.
We'll try and move on. I mean, so Kieran Culduff, then, you're now preparing for a FAI Cup quarterfinal later this week against Bowes. And you're in really bad form
at the moment, Bowes.
And you're adjusting to the sort of management side of things. I mean, just tell us generally, like, what got you to go down that road and how much are you enjoying it?
Yeah, so obviously this time last year I was playing with Shells, and that was what I was planning on doing. And obviously the season ended pretty poorly for Shells, and I'd made my decision probably a couple of weeks prior to, obviously we got relegated in the end and we had a bad result in Athlone in the FAI Cup. And people were probably saying to me, it's the worst time to retire, you can't finish like that. But it was actually perfect for me. I was like, that's exactly why I'm retired. Do you know what I mean? When you get to that age, and I said it outside to Dara, I mean, like, you know, the money gets less and the work feels more, kind of thing. And it was just the right time for me. So I was happy to finish that side of my career. And then I'd done my B license and stuff like that, and it was something that I was doing locally, but not at a big level. And then Shane Hart had rang me from Maynooth, and he'd asked me to come over to play. And again, I was like, well, listen, no disrespect, but I'm not going to be playing at all, you know what I mean? If I was gone, I would have probably tried another year or two. No disrespect to Maynooth, but thanks, but no thanks. And then the coaching opportunity arrived, and to be going as assistant manager with him and work with him, and he's brilliant. And he'd Gavin Kinsella there as well, a great coach. And I went in and I loved it straight away. I took to it well, and I know it sounds silly, but I had enough context in the game that if there was anything I didn't know, I knew who to ask. Do you know what I mean? I'd fresh out of the league, so I was used to playing it.
Did you ask?
A few friends of yours and a few of you, you know. I know, but look, I knew, I was after playing with Stevie O'Donnell, who'd gone into management. I had Tim. Now, not that I ever overly picked their brains, but like I was even saying, I was lucky enough to go to the Dundalk for Test Arnhem game, and I watched 60 minutes of it with Stephen Kenny. Do you know what I mean? And it's great to just be your...
Talking about the game as it was going on.
I was there with my friend Fergal, and we were at the match, and Fergal was the physio at Dundalk, right, and he came over to us. So he came over and he sat down with us, and we watched the Dundalk game, and it was brilliant. And you know, not that there was any, we weren't you know, nothing major happened. And like we were chatting about the game, and it's just great having people who are, you know, so involved in the game that you could probably, if you needed to, pick their brains. Do you know what I mean?
He didn't sub you out for the last 30 minutes and bring Dave McMillan in.
He probably would have if he could have, but
back to memories.
No, that was good. I met Gary Rogers up there. It was a trip down memory lane. I hadn't seen Stephen in such a long time as well, that it was good to catch up, and you know, it'd be a great bit of his time. But as I was saying, so there's loads of people around the league that I was that I knew, you know, if I needed advice on something or systems I needed to play, or if it was people I could ask. So I was lucky in that department. So I was in anyway, and I hit the ground with Maynooth, and I love it, and I'm lucky to be there. We have a great bunch of lads, and to be fair, not that I'm here, well, I am here for that reason, but it was a huge achievement for us to get where we've got the last eight of the FA Cup, where you're coming from.
It doesn't happen anymore.
It doesn't, and what you have to deal with, we were out there talking, like, just, we don't have the headaches of budgets or anything like that, you know. No one gets paid. The lads work all week. It was like we beat Cove, which was a huge result, and it was such a big achievement for us, although they were probably one of the teams you wanted in League of Ireland football. Take nothing away from the achievement of actually beating them, because what we have to deal with their day-to-day and lads, you know, holidays and work, and they're entitled to do that, but we're trying to compete then, you know, at a high enough level, and now we're going to Daly Mount Park to play in the quarterfinal of the FAI Cup. It's brilliant to be part of it, and for me it's a dream start, because you realise now I get to stand on the dugout in Daly Mount, which was something, you know, that I wasn't going to automatically walk into after my playing career ended. So it's a huge achievement for the lads, and like we've some good players. Chatting to Dara before we came in, we had enough time to chat waiting for Johnny to get here, but
this actually worked, because you obviously did you sounded each other out in terms of
we've said all this before. No, but we're like, I had some good players there as well. Like, we look, Killian Duffy did his ACL against Cove, and like, it's different doing you're probably different getting an injury when you're with a team like Maynooth. They'll do everything, the club will support them and everything that they can do, but like, it's not like you're sitting there getting your week's wages and you're the best of medical team there and you can go wherever you want. Do you know what I mean? We have to deal with what we have, and Killian will come back stronger for it, and a talented player and a big loss for us. Do you know what I mean? So we've stuff like that going on all the time, that, you know, it's very hard, but I can't lie to you. I mean, it's like Christmas week up there this week. The lads can't wait for the experience.
So what's the structure down the club? Because Barry Prendeville obviously has a big role to play. Like, what's the dynamic between the various people? Because it was Shane who brought you in. So what way does it work then?
So Shane is the manager. I'm the assistant manager. And Gav is the coach. And Barry would look after everything. Barry Prendeville has done so much for the college and the team over the years. He used to manage the team and what else. And he's recruited so many of those players in. And he's done an amazing job. And he's been there for years.
Is he a local fella then? Or?
But Barry's he's working with the college. Barry obviously played in the league for years as well and had a great career. But Barry's... literally, like, he's recruiting players, and he'd give us any help we need. And when we're lucky, we have a great board there, and it's a great bunch of people, to be fair, to be working with. It helps, it really does. And to be fair, it's more of a feel good story, I suppose, than anything. Do you know what I mean? This is more, no disrespect to any League of Ireland teams, because I'm, you know, I don't bite the hand that feeds me, but this is a pure side of football. It's literally lads playing because they love the sport. There's no distraction. There's nothing, you know, other than the lads can't believe they get to play in Daly Mount. And listen, we're not going up there to make the numbers. Don't make it out like that. Like, we'll have a game plan and we'll be ready for the game and all those things. But I can't lie, like, the lads, you know, when they got the draw, they knew what an achievement it was. And it's kind of probably reminded me then maybe how lucky I was, because there are things that I might have taken for granted. Yeah, but then when you drop down a level or two, you realise, wow, you know, there's a huge... We're representing all non-league teams now. That's the way we're looking at it. We're representing the Leinster Senior League, and there's a lot of good players and a lot of good people involved in that, and we're just hoping we can represent them well.
There was a suggestion that Maynooth were like even looking at, when the expressions of interest for the First Division come out, they weren't sort of ruling it out. Like, there is maybe some ambitions there down the road, potentially. Yeah. Is that a possibility?
No, that's 100% a possibility, and that's hopefully the plan. Maynooth have managed to compete the last couple of years. They've got, I think they played Cork a couple of years ago in the FAI Cup, then they played Waterford, obviously lost both games, but they're trying to consistently get back to a level to show, you know, can we be considered? Do you know what I mean? I think they should be. Kildare is a huge population and it's so close to Dublin to not have a represent. I know the Kildare County probably project failed back in the day, but there was a lot of things done wrong as well back then. I played for Kildare County, and probably as it was on its way out, if you know what I mean, when I was young breaking in. But There's a huge appetite for football.
Ramoba Medeli at the moment, Travers.
Yeah, huge. There's always been players from Kildare, myself and Feely, we're all League of Ireland players. Mm-hmm. Like, there was people from around the area who, you'd love, not saying your whole career you'd spend there, but you'd love the opportunity to have played within your county if that was possible.
And I spoke to Gary Shaw's dad about that, Sandy, who's the head jumps handicapper, and he would have been a good footballer, but he'd never had that chance to play. He would have played for local teams in Kildare, but yeah. he, from his perspective, it's definitely something that people could look into and would support eventually.
And I think Kildare people are proud of that. You know, they'd all row in behind it, myself included. And I'm not going to lie to you, before I took the job with Shane, like, it was... he had pitched it to me, and Barry Prendeville had said, well, this is something we could think of in the next 2-3 years. They're on about a third tier, they're on about a conveyor belt. Absolutely, we want to be considered to be. And I think getting to a quarter final of the FA Cup will keep us on the map. It's good publicity. We're here talking about Maynooth today, do you know what I mean? Which is something, if we weren't in the quarter final of the Cup, we wouldn't be talking about it. So it's good to keep us there. And absolutely, there's a plan if the opportunity arrives.
Because, I mean, I suppose people would say, I know they weren't actually playing for Maynooth, but even like Jamie McGrath, Sean Hoare, there was that sort of pathway there. I know there was a relationship there. But if you have a university relationship, there's an obvious way that can work, right? I mean...
Yeah, we see it. I mean, you know, UCD were a university team. I was played with them back in the day, and that always has been there. And there's been a conveyor belt of players supplying the league. It tends to work well if you look at that one, that case study. But if you look at Maynooth, the amount of top quality players, you just named two of them there that have gone through. I was in Maynooth studying. Now, I didn't play for the college. I was just studying. I got my points and I went there. Yeah, I wish. No, but like it was literally, I went that route, and I was in Maynooth College. So there's been a huge amount of talented players who've come through Maynooth. And that's, again, down to Barry Prendeville's recruitment and the players that are supplied. But the problem is you get them in for so long and then there's nowhere for them to go eventually. They just drift off. And even for young people playing in the county up to 17, 18, 19, eventually it just stops. There's nothing to aspire to within the county. It's like, okay, now you can go 10 miles down the road and play for six teams in Dublin, or, you know, 20 miles down the road and there's six of them available there. And we're literally going, well, why can't we just, you know, keep it within our border and have an option there for people? And I think it'll do a lot for the sport within the county.
I mean, Dara, what do you mean the idea of a third tier and expansion? I know you have links with Swords, say you would have coached teams there.
Yep.
But there are parts of the country, and we're very sort of Dublin sort of you know, East Coast focused, but you look at Mayo and parts of the country, Kerry don't have a team. Like, what about the idea of expansion there? Do you think there's untapped potential?
Yeah, 100%, and it's something that we need to look at as a country, a sort of, to get a sort of pyramid system if there was two below. I mean, you've mentioned a number of things there. The Maynooth thing, why can't they not be exactly like UCD try to emulate something that they do there? And he talks about, you know, if lads can have 4 years there and then move on, look at the players that have moved on from UCD and how greatly they've benefited League of Ireland football.
Good facilities as well too, training facilities, which is massive.
100%.
Better than most League of Ireland.
You mentioned Kerry, you mentioned, obviously you have a lot of family in Carlow. I mean, the facilities down there in Carlow are top notch.
And
Carlow has a hunger, I think, for football as well. So there's a number of places all over the country that these things can happen, and it can only benefit football in the country if we have more clubs, if we improve standards, and if people see an actual pathway. And if there was two leagues, you might get to a stage there where you have the amateur teams in the leagues below, like in England with the pyramid system, I suppose, like from you have level step 1 to step 11 or whatever over there, the teams can get promoted to the Conference North, the Conference South, to the Conference, and then they come into the Football League. And why can't we not look to build a business and an industry over here that supports football and makes it something that's a realistic, I suppose, means of employment? But at the minute, we probably have 5 or 6 teams that are properly full-time in the whole country.
Yeah.
You know, and to improve...
How do you fund it, though, then? You know, like, say Longford is a tiny town, and it's... obviously, the help that you've had from Phil Munley and everyone that's been involved there, it's hard without that backing to... and without government backing for academies and so forth, it's very hard to fund it, pay wages.
You say it is, but, I mean... There's millions and millions goes into greyhounds and horse racing every year. We're talking about people. Invest in people. Simple.
Yeah.
Invest in people and your country and your football, and everything will benefit from it. There is money there. So let's not make excuses that there isn't. There's money that goes on lots of things. And don't get me wrong, there's loads of sports and loads of things that need, I suppose, extra money to make things better. But
where does it go, though?
I think people need to sit down around the table and discuss them exact points of where it does go and what the future is to bring and the benefits of these things. And there's huge benefits if we can create a football industry within this country. There is. And listen, there's a football industry obviously in the UK because they're our nearest neighbours, but they still have issues in the football pyramid in England. When you get down to League One, League Two, there's stories you hear, and I've a lot of friends still over there playing, and some of them at that stage, it's like clubs are going out of business in England as well. So, you know, there's issues with football, but, you know, we do need to improve things here in this country, most definitely, and people need to sit down to see exactly what we can do and how we can make things better. But I do feel that getting an extra league in there and bringing more clubs into the league will most definitely benefit the league and give people an option to play football for the locality. And why can't, if they do things really well off the pitch, that's going to help on the pitch. If they're doing things well on the pitch, they have a chance of promotion. And if the clubs can continue to build, and listen, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. This is a long-term thing that needs to happen, but I do feel it needs to happen.
I think the hard thing is, like, Kieran, as you mentioned, like you were at the highest level in the country here, and then when you just drop off that a bit and you go to Shells and it's maybe not as enjoyable, as you said, the money goes down, and all of a sudden a lot of people your age, they all start to drift away. Like, there is, it's a young league, and a big part of the reason it's a young league is that a lot of people get to a certain age, and unless they're at the top couple of clubs in the country, it's almost like it's not worth it for them.
Yeah, but look, if, like Dara was saying, if you look at the, we only have 20 clubs at any given time, which means there's only 20 managers' jobs, which means there's only the very select few even players in the country who get paid to play football. I think it's probably somewhere between 250 and 300 who are picking up any bit of financial gain from the sport. So I don't particularly think, if you were use Maynooth again as an example, I don't think there'd be much difference between Maynooth and the bottom four, five, six teams in the first division right now, even in terms of financial backing. Like, we're not looking for huge money. It's like we competed against Cove there in the last 16, and quality wise there was very little in it. I would argue that Maynooth's facilities are as good as probably what Cove are using. I have no idea, but like, it's a college, it's got everything there, gyms, astro, grass pitches. Like, it's actually, the blueprint is there to do it. And there's a couple of them around, like you're saying, Carlo might have it too with the college. Yeah. So there is a couple, like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. But when you do drop down, you do begin to get a bigger picture. I was lucky enough maybe when, and to be fair, I had a great time at Shells as well. I was lucky enough because Shells are actually a sleeping giant of a club. Like, I won the first division with them and I realised how big of a club that is. You know what I mean? And then previous to that, I was lucky, I was at Dundalk and Rovers and stuff like that. So I've always been,
very likely Shells will go full time by the sounds of if they go up next year. Seems like it's going to go that way.
Shells are a brilliant club. Like, if I was to look back, you know, if I had to support any team nearly after my career, I'd probably be looking at Shells. The people around that were great. They deserve success. I was so gutted that they went down that year the way we did. It was the short season, and I think we were a couple of points off Europe and still.
What happened there, by the way? That was just mad.
I was there, I think, for 18, 19 months worth of the two seasons combined. And I'd say for 18 months of it, it was brilliant. We won a first division. We were going up to Derry with five games to go with, where if we won, I think we went into the European spots. And then we just had a bad month where we lost up in Derry. We started going on a bit of a run. And by the end of it, I mean, Longford done us then in the playoff, but we were probably gone by then. So it was just, I can't really explain it. We probably didn't have the characters we needed to get it over the line.
And when he mentioned Dundalk being nervous there, like, Dundalk were nervous against Longford Town, a team who hadn't won the first.
This is the question.
What? Like, how? What? Like, and then he starts name dropping Stanton, Hoob, and Patching, all these players. And Dan's gone on with injuries. That's well and good. But, like, this is completely insane. They're second last.
You watched them against Vitesse Arnhem, and how can you reconcile
the second half against Vitesse Arnhem was one of the best performances I'd seen from a team in Ireland in a long time.
Look at the results since then.
Oh, no, it's incredible. And look, it happens. It even happens at a lower level with us in Maynooth. I mean, we beat Cove, and unfortunately, then we went down and we played Aidan Derry and lost. Do you know what I mean? And you're kind of going, what? What's going on here? Like, those games kind of take care of themselves a little bit. The European nights, even for maybe Maynooth, an FA Cup game, because, you know, you're always going to be ready for that. It's the bread and butter. And Dundalk now have fallen into a little bit of a slump where you're kind of going, I think they lost to Waterford at home 3-1 as well, was it?
That was prior to that, yeah.
There was a couple of flags going anyway, kind of going, but they're not exactly flying here. And then the performance was brilliant, as we said. They should have won that game. They really should have. Like, the chances at the end was unbelievable. And then since then, it's been a struggle. And it's hard to get out of that struggle when you're in it. Do you know what I mean? And that's probably what I experienced at Shells, tying back to that. It was just, we were on the ropes. We just couldn't get over the line. Probably me personally, I was so desperate for the season to end and just have stayed up and go, like, now I could probably just retire. And I was so desperately trying to get to the line, and we just couldn't get there. And eventually it falls apart for you. And that's what happened at Shells. And I'm so happy it looks like they're going to come back up, because, as I said, they deserve to be. And they, They're a huge club, honestly. I didn't realise it until I played for them. Even the Bowes Rovers derby, I think it was one of the last games before, Bowes Shells derby, one of the last games before COVID hit in up in Dalymount. I remember playing it and it was like, and we actually played them the year before in the FAI Cup and Mandrew scored 2 late. We lost 3-2. But those games, I didn't even know they had that potential. I was used to Rovers Bowes, you know what I mean, thinking that was a huge fix. But the Shells Bowes one was huge. And they're a great asset to the league. Those nights were really special. And to be fair, I'm so happy they're coming back up because they deserve it.
But the Holden Dog thing, though, I mean, you were there for the highest highs. We earlier on, before you come on, we have a quiz question which was related to the 2016 run. And everyone spoke at that time about, you know, culture. That was one of the big things, the culture of the club, and people who come in had to buy into it. And that was part of the thing. Even some players would come in and it might take them a while to get up to it. They'd be better in their second season because they get used to it. Like, from the outside, and I accept you're very much speaking from the outside, how do you think that culture has been lost somehow?
I think Dara touched on it at the start, the way he was handpicking people for his club. And I think Stephen Kenny was given time and a license there to handpick the certain individuals to bring in and what he wanted from them. I think now, it's no disrespect to any signings they have, I wouldn't be as familiar with that team. I mean, that 2016 team isn't even, 5 years ago now that we were in the Europa League? There's a huge overhaul of players there, like huge. Like half of them have gone to other teams in the league, and the other ones, some have gone to England, and some have retired, and some
and
are managing.
Staff as well, too, as well. It staff is a big one.
Overhaul there. And I don't know who made all the decisions or whether they were all meant to happen the way they were. Like, I mean, you even look at Vinny's situation. It is a bit of a mess. He had the job, then they took it off him, then they gave him the job again. And you're literally going, like, that's not how you would imagine a football club to be run successfully. Do you know what I mean? There was never that uncertainty around it or that stuff. And our team in 2016, I was so lucky to be part of it, but I firmly believe I was there to serve a purpose that Stephen had selected me as an individual and as a player. And I don't think that's happening as much anymore. I think we're... what do I know? Do you know what I mean?
That Dundalk team, when you played against them, were relentless for 90 minutes plus. And you can't say that about this Dundalk team. It's shock and chase.
You haven't lost to them this year. You've taken points off them in all the games.
You mentioned the Rovers results.
We'll get back to that in a minute. But get back to that in a minute. But that's an interesting thing because you're preparing a team and you clearly went in. I know you weren't a manager when you played against the peak Dundalk team, but you had an expectation.
Yep.
So what's in your head now when you're playing Dundalk?
You played Dundalk I would have played against Dundalk, and you knew you were in for a game. You knew you wouldn't have much time on the ball. You knew they'd keep the ball really well. They caused you so much problems. Like, they probably only had 3 good chances the whole game against us the other night, and they don't play with that intensity that a Dundalk team used to play with. They just don't. It's just not there. And going into the game, I was positive, really positive, that we could get a result and a win against them. And, like, listen, I'm like that every week. I'm a positive enough person in how I deal with things and how I go into things, and I feel I can get something. It's like our next game now is up in Derry. I think we can win the game. And I've thought that every week. But, you know, sometimes playing that Dundalk team years ago, you know, I was on the end of, I think, I don't know, some games I played against Dundalk where you'd be hammered and you'd come off the pitch and go, geez, they just steamrolled us.
And
that's not there.
Yeah.
The players aren't there. The characters aren't there. And they were big, big players that they've lost. Like you mentioned, Ciarán, there's some big, big people. And I think the way they drove the team on was key.
Well,
it really was.
Say as well as that, like, obviously they made terrible decisions, I think, in terms of, like, bringing in an inexperienced manager and the initial place. And, like, they brought in so many different nationalities. But I was like, I got to thinking about Rory Higgins there last week, because obviously the Derry City chairman and the sale of the company, all that was in the news. And it's quite clear Rory Higgins is going to get back next season. Yep. That's a challenge as well, though. So now he's inherited a bunch of players that, like, you know, they're all working together. Now he has to bring in better players. He has to pay them a good wage. And that's not a challenge you've necessarily had at Longford, but, like, this could be a challenge for Rory Higgins, because you have to marry, as Ciarán says, characters, and also, like, you can't have a lad coming in on double the wages of a fellow who's as good as him. Like,
yeah, but listen, I'm sure, no, I've known Rory for years and years, a good friend of mine, and I'm sure, knowing Rory, it's a challenge that he'll absolutely relish. And I'd be very confident that Rory and the people he has working with him will bring in the right players and the right people. And, you know, a lot of the signings at Dundalk have been questionable, an awful lot of them. And I know they talked a couple of years ago about there's not enough players within this league for us to get. I mean, Pat Fenlon, when he managed in this league, signed the best players in this league and they won leagues.
Mm.
You know, they brought in players that you cannot say are the best players in this league with the wages and the salaries they're on. They're just not.
No. And I think Higgins was a big loss to Dundalk as well. You would have known him, obviously.
Well, he was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's hard to, you know, you're signing players who've never played in the league. So it's hard for them to be the best players in the league. Whereas when I look back to their Dundalk successful days, and even after I left, he was just signing players who'd been there, done that, and had done it in the division. And he knew what you were going to get. There is a risk when you sign some of the players they've signed. And I think they've kind of fell on that sword a bit.
Mm. Well, I mean, Johnny jokes about it there, Dara, but I mean, your experience with the Shamrock Rovers this season, it's sort of, I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, yeah. It's actually unbelievable that...
Yeah, they've led it for less than 3 minutes in three games.
Yeah. I shouldn't laugh, but like, that's...
Well, you did just laugh, Johnny.
The third time it happened, I remember my mate texted me, the referees after giving 5 or 6 minutes injury time here.
It's like, what are we adding now for injury time? And it's, you know, the old joke nearly now at this stage. Oh, we're just going to play the Rover score.
Rover time, as they call it, yeah.
And that's what it felt like. But again, in those particular games, and I've got to give the Rovers teams a lot of credit, they are relentless.
How do they compare to that Dundalk team of the one in their pomp, as we refer to there?
That would be a very good game. They probably play a different formation. They have a different setup with obviously playing with three at the back compared to that team. And I think when you look at the Dundalk teams of the past, they had so much pace in wide areas. You know what I mean? They had very good centre forwards. They had control of midfielders. They had fullbacks who were up and down that pitch solid. And they probably had a bit more dynamism in that Athlone team. And it's probably one thing I feel that the Rovers team is lacking a little bit at the moment is that extra bit of speed and dynamism for the team to go up, because sometimes they play beautiful football, but it's a lot of the time in front of you.
It found them out in Europe, didn't it?
Yeah, no, it did. And I think in certain positions at the highest level, you need technical players that are very, very good, but you need players that are able to move and cover ground very quickly. And it's probably something that's they've struggled at in the middle of the park and in wide areas.
I think Bradley and McPhail were spotted at a UCD game there recently, and I think you can see they need to freshen up their team. Like, I think that was the thing about the Dundalk side. I know it was just when you were leaving, maybe going to America, I'm trying to think the crossover, but you'd bring in a Sean Hoare or a Jamie McGrath into the dressing room on a 2-3 year deal, and that was the freshening up of the thing. It wasn't necessarily always the... Like, Rovers have gone for a couple of older, being around the block players this year. There's a balance to be found with the young lads coming up as well, isn't
it? Well, it was Stephen at the time. Stephen Kenny was there the whole time I was there. There was no one else, so I only know from that period. Yeah. But he seemed to have a conveyor belt of players that he just knew came in seamlessly. Do you know what I mean? They were all so, not that it mattered, but a lot of them tended to come from the education route. Oh, but he was at UCD or, you know, for whatever reason. Whether that was the reason he hand-selected them, I don't know. But like, it seemed to be always a player who was playing in the league, who was doing well, who was, you know, a good guy. I know some people say, you can't win things with good guys, you need whatever, but like, we just had a good balance of it, you know what I mean? And it was a well-run ship, and you know, it was like, I left and Hoban came back, but Hoban had been there before me and been a success, so there was never a doubt that he was going to come back and score more goals, do you know what I mean? And that was kind of it. And me and Dave McMillan had probably a couple of hundred goals between us in the League of Ireland when we were playing at Dundalk, so it wasn't like we were unproven at the time. We'd scored a lot of goals, so it was just it was, whether it was good decision making or whatever, but it seemed to be he made those decisions from back to front in all positions, and they worked for him.
Just before we let you go, lads, what do you make of Stephen Kenny's situation at the moment, Dara? There's obviously debate that just, well, I mean, we were talking about, so we're not going to labour it, but I mean, it's big debate around where things are going. I mean, what do you make of it?
Yeah, it's obviously difficult for him. You know, you look at the results that are there, and you know, he has a bigger picture that he's looking at, and I know a lot of people are looking at it and saying, well, is his job about the bigger picture or is it about results? And at international football, obviously, we do have an issue with football in this country. Brexit is a huge issue for the development of our younger players, where we don't have somewhere for our 15 and 16 year olds now to have full-time football that they do in the majority of other countries in Europe. So we're miles behind already before players turn 18 now. Miles behind. So it is a huge issue. And I talked about it previously of the development that we need in the country. And Stephen is, you know, I think he's asking questions. I think he sees the bigger picture of what is really important. But the big picture for Ireland is to improve the national team. is to qualify for tournaments, because that's the only way, unfortunately, with the debt that the FAI have now, is that they're able to get money in the bank. And that's the big thing. And if you don't qualify for these tournaments, the money isn't there. And we're talking about the league and how it needs investment and how that will come from the FAI. So it's, you know, it's hard to look at it. And when you look at it, I suppose, reflectively from both ways, well, is it about money and results and money coming in? Yes. Is it about developing and helping football in this country? Yes. Stephen wants both of those things. And I think you can, I enjoy watching Ireland more now than I probably ever did in the last 10 years, to be honest. I can see what he's trying to do. We're blooding a lot of young players. But it's difficult for us because what should we expect? Like, you know, you look at Luxembourg and they've shot up over 100 places in the rankings over the last number of years because they tore up their book about 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, they've got full-time coaches.
They've had the same manager for the last 10 years.
13 years. 13 years that manager's in a job.
13
years that manager's in a job. So, you know, that is the big picture. Are we prepared as a country to take a hit in the short term for success in the long term? And listen, I'm backing Kenny all the way, to be honest, personally. I think he needs that time. I think he needs to be supported. You're definitely going to have... Listen, I played in England myself, and although I went over as a young lad, I had 9 years over there at different levels. I know how League of Ireland football and people are perceived in England, and unfortunately it's not that good. And that's up to us to improve that here. We are the ones on the ground. We are the ones that can affect it. And, you know, it's going to take an awful lot of work, but from the side of the football and the games that are coming up ahead of us, we definitely need to finish the group strongly. And I think Stephen needs to finish the group strongly from his point of view for the future of himself and to what's ahead of him in the next campaign.
I mean, Kieran, I know you're naturally going to be well disposed to Stephen, given your relationship, but just stepping back from that, I mean, what's your take on where he is?
Listen, I actually think it'd be a bigger risk to not let him continue for a little while longer than actually the opposite, because it'll just go back to where we were. Like, Stephen kind of came in and he wanted to change things, and everyone knew that. But now, straight away, because we haven't got the instant results, the easy one for people to sit back and go, actually, look at the results. And the results are hard to defend at times. Like, that's a given. And Stephen himself came out in an interview and said, you know, to turn the draws into wins, I think was a comment as well. But it's just funny because the whole country is actually talking about Stephen Kenny and the Ireland team at the minute, which is, in one sense, a great thing. Although it's probably for the wrong reasons. Everyone's debating. You go for a coffee with your friend and he's telling you, he's looking at the results and I'm going, yeah, look at the way we're playing. Look at the young lad. You didn't know who he was. There's a huge debate at the minute. And it's probably good for Irish football in that sense. People are now looking at the Irish team. These young lads are becoming household names that you'd never heard of before. There's a little bit, results aside, there's a feel-good attitude to watching a young Ireland team trying to play the right way. I was training with Maynooth on the Tuesday night we played Serbia, and I came home and I watched the last half hour, which actually looked like we were in the ascendancy. We'd scored and there were celebrations or whatever at the end, and then I went to the studio and the RTEs were complimentary about it, and then I went to bed and I turned on Twitter and I watched Virgin Media's account of it, and it was
different game.
We were
battered and all these things.
Sky were the same with Clinton Morrison and was it Kevin
John Walters?
John Walters. That was it.
Who came on off the ball to clarify what he'd said actually subsequently that night, because he thought he'd been taken a little bit out of context, so he wanted to.
So it's dividing
the
opinion.
The Kerr issue was interesting because Kerr is obviously highly respected and he'd be fairly critical.
If I was to have watched that,
there's always layers to it.
Yeah, if I was to have watched, if I'd come in, I was expected. One of the broadcasters were going to defend him. It would have been the other way around. Brian Kern being a League of Ireland man, surely you would have expected him to support, you know, and appreciate what Stephen's trying to do. It didn't seem to be that way. Surprisingly, it was Liam Brady and
Stephen Kelly and
Richie Sadler being more complimentary, and then the other channel was the opposite. So you're literally kind of going, well, the truth is I missed
the
60 minutes
is,
of the game, so
the
to get up the next morning.
In between, because like RTE were way over the top at the end.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Massively
yeah.
deserved a draw. I mean, let's be honest, we were kicked off the park for most of the game and then we rallied. Like, so it was somewhere in between. But as you say, everyone's talking about, before you go, I brought this up a couple of times. You're that Dutch lad that you got out of the way in the...
Where
goal
is
against,
he now? Kind of
this was the
have
actual...
You, have you forgotten his name?
This was... Veghorst, is it? Or? This was the actual text, 17th of the 6th. Is that the big Dutch lad you fucked out of the way that time? And that was sent at 9:10 the following morning. That's the one, all right. Weird how he went on to play up front in the Euros and I retired at 32. Some lads catch all the breaks.
Yeah.
But this was the guy for the Alkmaar header, just
for the
to be
Alkmaar
clear.
Who was playing for... But you had a hell of a career. Like, I was just thinking, not only that, but your goal against Maccabi then, and Dundalk are possibly Dane Massey's header away from being 7 points from three games in an unbelievably tough group involving Zenit St. Petersburg, and you were part of that.
Yeah, it was great. I remember it was 20 minutes to go, and we were 1-0 up against Zenit, and we were literally 7 points from nine, top of the group, and you know, you were dreaming then, do you know what I mean? And, you know, obviously we lose the game against Zenit, and we failed, you know, from there to get out of the group, but we went into that sixth game week with a chance of getting out of the group.
Unbelievable.
Which was amazing, and that's competing at the highest level, which was huge, and the highlights of my career without a doubt. And it, you know, every time I come on, you pull up Veghorst from somewhere. I think
Johnny's obsessed with this.
He was a man mountain, and he was six foot seven or something, just wrestled him out of the way. And that was a testament to your conditioning. Yeah. What about Darragh Doyle's future and John Martin and the Longford project?
Yeah, listen, we've 9 games to go, and you know, we're probably at the moment just taking it a game at a time. And I'm positive and I'm hopeful that we can get a win up in Derry. Where that will bring us, we'll see. We'll take that approach in every game for the remainder of the season. And, you know, we've got a group of players and people at our club that won't stop, that won't give up, and will continue to give everything they have. It's all we can ask for. We prepare really well. As regards to staff, I can't speak highly enough of the actual work that we do for a part-time team off the pitch in preparation for each game. And I think anyone that has come and watched us can see every single game we're set up really well. We make the most of everything we have. Now, we fell short on a number of occasions, but listen, that is what it is. A couple of decisions and, you know, that bit of luck hasn't gone our way. You know, probably the bit of luck we had this year was probably up in Finn Harps, where I think Aaron Dobbs has probably stood in an offside position and it might have came off air player, had it in their player in the box, and the ref said it came off their player and we got the goal. But that's probably the only real break we've probably had this year. But, you know, we've had 9 games to go. We'll see where it takes us. Obviously, there's a big gap between us and the teams ahead of us at the moment, but that's still 27 points to play for, and we will turn up and play for each and every single one of those points for the rest of the year.
And see where it takes it. Kieran, can you bring fans to the game on Friday? Is there an allocation there for you?
Yeah, we have a couple of hundred coming now. That's probably family and friends more than fans.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, some locals as well will come out for the day. But no, we're looking forward. I'm going up to Ballybuffet now after this to watch Bowes tonight against Finn Harp. So I have a road trip in my hands ahead.
See, you're a real Ollie Horgan waiting. Ollie Horgan goes to every game. Finn Harps always seem to be playing somebody next week, and Ollie's, I'm at the game. Like, I was talking to Bowes fans, and they're like, Ollie, you've been at about 10 games in Dalymount already this
year. I'll tell you better, when we were playing Bonaghy United in the last 64 of the FAI Cup on the Astro in Maynooth, and Ollie Horgan was behind the gate.
he's never off.
He does his
man.
Homework anyway, in fairness.
Best of luck Friday. It's going to be compelling,
looking forward to it.
And the fixtures this weekend, it's an interesting FAI Cup now, because I think everyone thinks they have a chance, even Maynooth maybe, UCD, Waterford, St. Pat's, Wexford, Bowes, Maynooth, Finn Harps, Dundalk.
Yeah, we should say so, as well, Bowes, Maynooth, hopefully the policing of that game isn't as controversial as the previous Cup games. You see Stephen Bradley's comments.
I didn't actually.
No, because you were in bed, of course, that's why you were here late. Stephen Bradley's comments, very...
So rich very, coming from you. Very, like, you up until you had a child, you used to get up at about 1 o'clock every day. Like,
I know, but now I was up at 6:30 this morning, so I'm like, what's going on?
Bradley's comments anyway. And I was up at like 8:30, which is, well, you know, okay. Not bad.
But he's very critical of... we will probably return to it again, but not satisfied with, I suppose, the stewarding arrangements around that cup tie a couple of weeks ago.
I think that's fair enough.
So we'll see. Hopefully there's no recurrences. This Friday with the Maynooth Ultras,
it would be all right.
Had you a good record against Bowes, actually?
I did okay later in career, yeah. Dundalk, yeah. The Bowes Rovers ones were great back in the day, but we tended to lose the odd one as well. So hopefully Maynooth will put it up to them anyway.
Harps Dundalk, Dan, is going to be very interesting. Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, Dundalk are in such a weird place. I mean, this is their route to Europe, but you would have sort of assumed that they would be in Europe.
And Bowes as well. Like, Bowes are in real danger not getting to Europe next season.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, this is it. So the Cup is very interesting because we always have it in our head that fourth place will get you into Europe because you'd assume that one of the top teams, but two of the top three are already out of the Cup. So, yeah, I mean, you could have a Cup final this year in theory where there's like... There's two elements to it. It's winning the Cup and there's also Europe, you know, for the team at stake. So that could add something more to it. So, I mean, Harps and Dock is huge. I mean, Harps are playing. We're conscious the time this goes out, Harps would have played Bowes.
Harps are
in a better place in terms of, say, squad and options than Dundalk actually are at the moment, which is sort of a weird way to talk about it. Whereas Dundalk, if they have one or two more issues in Sligo on Tuesday, I mean, they're really, really light.
Just to briefly to mention the results of the First Division, Wexford, unbelievable goal from young Moylan on loan from
Jack Moylan,
Bowes, three Cove Ramblers, one. Galway nil, Treaty nil. I obviously missed this game, but I was talking to the respective kind of camps, and yeah, it was one for the purest, Dan, as Tommy Barr predicted last week. UCD 5.
But you are one of the camps, to be clear. Cabin You're Teely the media 2. Officer for Galway.
I am indeed. Yeah. I had a night off. UCD 5, Cabin Teely 2, Cork nil, Shelburne 2, pretty much league all but wrapped up. Paul Doolan, Bray Wanderers nil at Lone 1, so it's the fight still goes on.
See, 2,000 people at Turner's Cross on Friday, which isn't bad for a team that's...
Wow.
The team that's mid-table, to be fair, in the first division, just goes to show the potential that still lingers there.
What a club that could be, and maybe still will be under Colin Healy. That's it, Dan, I think.
I think we're done. And Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers is on Saturday as well. That's the other fixture this week. It's a rescheduled league game, so...
Everyone who wants a title race is obviously praying for a Sligo win. They're very good on Friday night, to be fair, in front of the TV cameras. Thanks a million for coming in, lads.
Thanks, lads.
That was in association with futureticketing.ie. Best of luck to Kieran Kilduff. Could it be another St. Francis? 1991, was it?
1990.
I think we'd all love to see...
He knows the year already because he's looked it up.
It's in the dressing room walls.
Giving away my speech before the match.
You were at the game.
Yes.
What age are you then?
I was 9.
Who brought you to the game?
My dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think I went with Galway in it the next year.
91, yeah.
Yeah,
it's the only team they've ever won.
Well, because I've got a lot of family in Galway as well, so I was at the 91 final as well.
We need more Darragh Doyle in our lives, actually. Yeah. Family in Carlow and Galway, like, there's a lot going on there. Thanks for listening.